Welcome to Curtain Call with Cosmo and Pauline. We're very happy to have you with us. This is our 20th episode. Congratulations, Cosmo.
And congratulations to you too, Pauline. I can't believe it's been 20 episodes already. What number are you on for Musician Talk?
81.
81. Wow, that's crazy. You're going to have to go out with a big celebration when you make it to 100.
I plan to. I'm going to have a big guest. I don't know who yet, but I'm going to have a big guest, maybe with a concert and everything.
Oh, wow. Nice. Hold a live performance. I like it.
Exactly. So what episode are we calling this? By chance? Could it be?
It could be the grandiose spectacle of the Academy Awards Oscar special.
That's right. And today's going to be a little different, right? We're not going to spend as much time on some of the things that we usually do because we got a lot to say.
Yes, indeed. We do. And I'm very much looking forward to running through some of this year's biggest nominees in a few minutes.
Absolutely. What we did was we'll each speak to the shows that the movies that we saw and then the movies we didn't see. We divided those up between us and we'll talk about them and give you an idea what they're about, what the reviewers say, because we didn't see half of them. Basically.
Right. Yes. But since this is a theater show, of course, we need to mention some theatrical things. Otherwise, we would just be frauds. For theater news going on at the Northfield Arts Guild this month, we'll talk a little bit later about the show that they're going to be actually performing this month. Opening night is tonight, so that's a little hint. But later in the month is auditions for the Guild's spring show, Mom the Musical. So you Sopranos out there, mark your calendars for May 19th and May 20th. And they're actually still searching for a director and a music director. So if anybody's interested in that, you can email the Guild.
I have a bone to pick. Sopranos only?
Altos.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Okay.
We need to be included.
I'm sorry for my offensive words. Yeah, so this sounds like an interesting show. And let's just hope that there's a sequel installment, Aunt the Opera. Just saying. Also going on at Paradise Center for the Arts, Paradise Community Theater is getting closer to presenting their production of The Play That Goes Wrong. This slam-bang murder mystery comedy features a splendid cast and is sponsored by the Merlin Players. Rest in peace. Performances will begin on March 31st. Yes, that's an actual date. Some people like me think that March ends on the 30th, but nonetheless. And it runs through April 8th. So if you liked Noises Off, this is just the show for you. You can go to paradisecenterforthearts.org to purchase tickets.
Like, I was in Noises Off, which this is like, and right. it's cacophony, basically. And it's hilarious. If this show is half as funny as Noises Off, you will laugh through the whole thing. It is it's such a fun type of production where you kind of see the inner workings of a theater production gone really wrong.
Right. Yeah. And it's so relatable too for theater people because you feel that terror of going on stage sometimes. And
it's what nightmares are made of. Definitely.
Right. Yes, exactly. I've had many of them. And the set design is usually really cool too. So it sounds like a great show.
Absolutely. Is that what you got for locally?
Yes. And what do you have up in the cities, Pauline?
Well, first I want to say I'm so happy I got a chance to see Hello, Dolly. Of course I went because Steve's playing in it, and it is just as good as I thought it was going to be. The whole cast is outstanding. Regina is great as the lead. And I have to say, the man that plays Cornelius is absolutely hilarious. He reminds me of a young Chris Farley.
Oh, really?
Okay. Unfortunately, I didn't even think of looking his name up. God darn it. But nonetheless, it's extended through March 26th. And if you can get tickets because they are selling out, you should go. It's, you know, Hello, Dolly is a comedy. People don't realize that. It is a very funny show. It's very, very funny. Yeah. Two other things I looked up. The Corduroy is at the Children's Theater. And the synopsis they have there is, oh no, Corduroy's button has gone missing and he can't go home with kind-hearted Lisa without it. Join the beloved teddy bear as he takes a rollicking ride up the escalator and begins a delightfully destructive romp through every section of the department store. Wow. That is running March 2nd through April 2nd. So,
Who doesn't love shows about teddy bears?
Exactly. And buttons. Mm-hmm. This is appropriate for ages 4 and up. And so just go to the Children's Theater website and you can get tickets there. And then I found this really cool thing at the Illusion Theater. It's called In This Moment Now, 2023. Illusion Theater began in this moment in 2020 when they invited African-American alumni of Illusion to respond to the brutal murder of George Floyd by the police on the streets of Minneapolis. These artists created work that was a response to the racial awakening that shook our community and generated protests around the world. For In This Moment Now, 2023, Illusion has commissioned artists to share their reactions to where we are now. How can theater, spoken word, dance, and song serve our community as we continue to reckon with systemic racism? So that sounds really good. And that's April 14th through 16th and April 20th through 23rd. And you can go to Illusion Theater website for more information and for tickets.
Wow, a great variety of shows going on there, all over the place, really. So that's what theater is all about. There's something for everyone.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. All yes. Right, you ready to dig in?
Yeah, wow, we really sped through that. Yes, that's right. This year is the 95th Academy Awards. It's airing on March 12th on ABC. And if you would just allow me to make my case for why I'm a reliable source of Oscar information.
Please.
I have purchased bragging rights to my Oscars ballot the past couple of years, because in 2019, I got all the categories right except two, which were Best Picture and Best Director, which was pretty frustrating, but I was close. I had 22 out of 24 categories correct. Thank you. But next year, I redeemed myself and predicted the Best Picture winner, which was Nomadland. And then last year was my greatest accomplishment, because on the nominations, I think I got about 80% right. And then for the actual wins, I got all but one, and it was Best Animated Short, which was frustrating, because it was anticlimactic, because I knew halfway through I wasn't going to reach the desired 100% line. But this year I'm confident I will win the family pool again.
You know what? That is very impressive.
Thank you.
I have never gone through and picked shows in all the categories or actors. And I know if I did, I'd peep up probably 20%.
Well, you know, that's all right. It's research is what goes into it. I've probably spent five times more amount of research on this than I should.
Got it. All right. So let's dig in. We're just going to talk about Best Picture.
Yes. Okay.
I mean, as far as getting into the details of it.
Right.
Start with one of the ones that you actually saw.
So one that I actually saw was Elvis. All right. And I've talked about this on the show before, so I don't need to go into great deal about it. Just know that I really liked it. I loved it. I can imagine that our November guest, Joseph Hall, would fit into this film pretty well. I would like to see that version.
Yes.
But nonetheless, this is a typical Oscar bait film. I mean, come on, it's a biopic, but it definitely deserves the recognition. Elvis follows the titular character through a series of triumphs and struggles, from a truck driver to one of the world's biggest stars, told through the lens of Presley's relationship with Colonel Tom Parker, who, spoiler alert, wasn't a real colonel or really a sane person. Now, Austin Butler's incredible performance is what truly makes this 2.5-hour movie stand out. He's nominated for Best Actor, and the film is also nominated for Best Film Editing, Cinematography, Costume Design, Production Design, Makeup, Hairstyling, and Sound. What did you think of this film, Pauline? I know you saw it.
Okay. Was Tom Hanks put up for Best Supporting Actor?
I know what you're going to say, and I think you're going to be relieved to hear no.
I couldn't finish the movie. I couldn't watch it because Tom Hanks was so bad. He was so bad. He was so unbelievable. The makeup and the prosthetics they put on his face were terrible. I couldn't look at him. I couldn't hear him talk. I just couldn't.
Wow.
I know. And I really used to like Tom Hanks, but after being in Pinocchio and he was so awful in that, I'm soured on him totally.
Well, you know, Pauline, you'll be relieved to hear also that he's nominated for a Razzie Award for Worst Supporting Actor in this movie and Worst Actor in Pinocchio, double nominations this year. So
yeah, well, it makes sense to me, totally.
I thought he was okay, but that's a conversation for another day.
It is. We can't get into it too much today because we have too much to say.
Correct.
That's right. Okay, me next?
Yes.
Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Rotten Tomato, 95%. I saw this a while ago, right when it came out, because I love movies like this. Mm-hmm. And let me just read what I have here. This movie's plot is full of twists and kinks. It is a swirl of genres. While the hectic action, including incredibly choreographed fight sequences and science fiction mumbo jumbo, I have to say, they're a big reason why I like the show, but they aren't really the point. This movie runs on tenderness and charm. It is a confused multiverse galaxy brain head trip, but deep down and also right on the surface, it's a bittersweet domestic drama, a marital comedy, a story of immigrant striving, and a hurt-infused drama of mother-daughter love. Wow. And that's all the synopsis I can give you, because it's too convoluted. But let me tell you, it is fun. It's just a lot of fun to watch. At the center of it all is Evelyn Wang, played by the charismatic, oh, she's so good, Michelle Yeoh, with grace, grit, and perfect comic timing. She's just so good. She could do everything well, it seems to me. Mm-hmm. Jamie Lee Curtis is also in it, and I like to call her the movie store next door actress, because
right.
And she shows up as she always does with her perfect timing and her just her wonderful
presence.
That's all I can say. And other stars are Kay Hui Kwan, James Hong, and Stephanie Su, and they are all really, really good. It's a fun movie. It's a lot of fun.
And I should point out, this is nominated for 11 Academy Awards, the most of any film this year. Coming up next is, I'm going to do one that I haven't seen yet, probably not for another three-ish years, because it's R, All Quiet on the Western Front. Now, this is a remake of a film that came out almost 100 years ago that actually won Best Picture back then. This is the only film nominated for Best Picture this year that comes from a streaming service, which is big because it's been dominated kind of in that field the last couple of years.
Wow.
And so this is an anti-war epic film, I guess you could say, that is set during World War I and follows German soldiers on the front lines and really showcases the brutal reality of war. So it's not comfort viewing by any means, and it's not a family show either. So keep that in mind. Yeah, so it's also nominated in, I believe, 8 other categories, including Best International Feature. It's in German, so if you're not a subtitle person, you're just going to have to deal with it. I prefer captions always, but that's, again, another conversation.
Right. Mm-hmm. I will see that one. I don't know if I want to, but I will. And I think that the Best Picture category this year is filled with kind of movies you don't necessarily want to see, but maybe are important to see. And the next one I'm going to talk about is Women Talking. Rotten Tomatoes score of 91. And here's what I have about that. Sarah Polley adapted Miriam Toews' novel of the same name into a timely political parable with a stellar ensemble cast that includes Frances McDormand, Judith Ivey, Rooney Mara, and Claire Foy. These are excerpts from the New York Times. Toews' book was suggested by actual events that took place from 2005 to 2009 at a Mennonite colony in Bolivia, but the film version doesn't specify a location. The women are members of an agrarian religious community that has kept its distance from modernity. Though many of them can recite the Bible from memory, they can't read or write. And though their educations have been minimal, their wisdom acquired through farm and household labor, child rearing, prayer, and intuition is vast, as it is for most women. Okay, I'm just saying, a little biased here. But it's sufficient enough to spur the emergence of a powerful and sophisticated collective that put together by these women for political consciousness, and how they arrive at a clear understanding of their oppression and potential liberation is the film's subject. That's what it's about. These women gaining some power. It's dark. I'm sure this is one I won't see. It's gotten great reviews.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that it's kind of like a play in a sense that it takes place, I think, all in one location, and it's very dialogue based. That's just what I've heard.
What you got next there, Mr.?
Yes. All right. On the more happy front,
thank you.
Avatar, The Way of Water. This comes 13 years after the original Avatar was nominated for Best Picture. It's directed by James Cameron. And, you know, I haven't seen the original Avatar, and I haven't seen this one. I need to at some point. I'm sorry, it's on my watch list. I'm going to watch it any day.
Isn't it right on Disney Plus? It's right there, free?
It every time I'm scrolling through, I'm like, should I watch this? But I don't know. Because, you know, I have strong thoughts on James Cameron that I'll get to in a minute. This film takes place more than a decade after the original, and it's set on the fictional planet, moon, whatever it is, of Pandora. It follows these alien blue people as they learn how to swim, basically. That's my version of it. But it's probably a lot more...
That's deep. That's really deep.
It's probably a lot more stirring and stuff like that. And the visuals are supposed to be phenomenal. The way that they filmed it, I believe Kate Winslet, who's in this film, held her breath for over 7 minutes. That would be crazy. But
that's like what the monks that have been in the mountains of, you know, some foreign country that have been, that know how to double breathe or whatever, could do something like that.
Yeah, so it's, you know, if you want to watch, that's fine. But the thing about James Cameron is I believe he's been colluding with filmmakers to cause the destruction of Star Wars.
That's right. Go back to this.
Pauline, I've sent you an essay on it. You can read it on my website, Planet Whiz Kid.
Got it. Okay. So the next one I have is called The Banshee of Inisherin. It stars Colin Farrell, who I love, and he's also up for Best Actor, and Brendan Gleeson. Directed by Martin McDonagh. All right, here's the synopsis. It's set on a remote island off the west coast of Ireland. The Banshees of Inisherin follows lifelong friends Pádraic and Colm, who find themselves in an impasse when Colm unexpectedly puts an end to their friendship. A stunned Pádraic, aided by his sister Siobhan and troubled young islander Dominic, endeavor to repair the relationship, refusing to take no for an answer, but Pádraic's repeated efforts only strengthen his former friend's resolve, and when Colm delivers a desperate ultimatum, events swiftly escalate with shocking consequences.
Oh my goodness.
Right, so this sounds like a relationship movie, kind of. Peter Bradshaw from The Guardian gave the film 4 out of 5 stars, writing that as a study of male loneliness and swallowed anger, it is weirdly compelling and often very funny. So there you have it.
Yeah.
Todd McCarthy from Deadline Hollywood wrote that the film was a simple and diabolical tale of a friendship's end, shot through with bristling humor and sudden moments of startling violence. What a combination.
A very diverse array of films nominated for Best Picture this year. Here's another one that's kind of about human drama, The Fablemans. And this is Steven Spielberg's latest outing. Spielberg, who is widely regarded as one of the greatest directors of all time, has finally made a film about his personal childhood. But it follows him when he's about 16, 17, I believe, his parents' relationship and his relationships at school and his pioneering filmmaking, what eventually turns into a career. Now, he doesn't call himself Spielberg in the movie. It's called The Fablemans because the family is called The Fablemans. So it's semi-autobiographical. He wrote the film with Tony Kushner, who did West Side Story last year, and also the movie Lincoln. I watched this 2 days ago, and I still don't have strong thoughts on it. I think the acting is really good. The score, I love John Williams' score always. But I can't pin down a feeling on it. So I would say kind of to see. I don't know how you kind of watch a movie unless...
That may be like me, that I just start it, and if I don't like it, I turn it off.
Yeah, exactly. Or my dad, who watches it with his eyes closed sometimes. And
all bands everywhere.
You know, I would say watch it if you're a Spielberg fan. You might have different thoughts on it than me. So I enjoyed it. It's not a bad movie at all. It's probably a pretty good movie if I take enough time to think about it.
You know, we're talking about that there are many shows on this list that are not sad, not happy and sad, depressing. And this next one I'm going to talk about, called Triangle of Sadness, has it right in the title, right? Right. Now, this one, even though it's nominated, got only 72 at Rotten Tomatoes. But let me tell you a little bit about it. Oh, sorry. This is also from New York Times. I mean, it's just parts. I can't take bits and parts from these things, sure. Right? Put it together the way I want to.
Plagiarism.
Exactly. But it's not, because I'm saying it's theirs.
Right.
In Ruben Östlund's wickedly funny movie, social hierarchy is turned upside down, revealing the tawdry relationship between power and beauty. The movie is divided into 3 acts, preceded by a short introduction. Celebrity model couple Carl and Yaya, played by Harris Dickinson and Charles B. Dean, are invited on a luxury cruise for the uber rich, helmed by an unhinged boat captain, Woody Harrelson. What first appeared Instagrammable ends up catastrophically leaving the survivors stranded on a desert island and fighting for survival. Richard Brody, in a critical review for The New Yorker, described Triangle of Sadness as a movie of targeted demagogy. I think that's how you say that. That pitches, it's a lot of big words here, that pitches its facile political stances to the preconceptions of the art house audience. Far from deepening those ideas or challenging those assumptions, it flatters the like-minded viewership while swaggering with the film's presumption of free thinking and subversive audacity. So what is it saying is it's kind of precious. So it's got it's got these rich people in it. We're supposed to see kind of their corruption and stuff, but it kind of plays into it, it sounds like. So I'm not going to see this one.
All right. Well, the final film I'm going to talk about is my personal favorite, the one that I think needs to win Best Picture. Guess what it is? Top Gun Maverick. And don't worry.
Oh, I knew it. I knew it. Of course, everybody that listens to this show would have guessed that.
Yeah,
it was either that or Elvis.
Right. Don't worry, folks. You're not dreaming. A film with the words Top Gun is nominated for Best Picture, as it ought to be. Back in January, I raved about this blockbuster and opined that it's the best movie of 2022. And I did not cry while watching that. I'm going to include that because it's very important that I didn't cry. Set over three decades after the original, Top Gun Maverick follows the Top Gun Naval Academy and, well, fighter pilot Maverick as a new crew of hotshots prepares to disembark on a perilous journey. This film is also nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Original Song, Best Film Editing, Best Sound, and Best Visual Effects. But Tom Cruise was snubbed. I mean, what does the Academy want him to do to get nominated? Die? Because he'll do it for filmmaking. He does his own stunts and everything. It's emotionally packed. It's action-packed. There's great performances. So, Pauline, you finally saw it.
I did, and I agree. I think it's a great movie.
Wow.
It's the flying is incredible. The filming, awesome. The cinematography and the flying is just absolutely incredible. And, you know, I usually don't like Tom Cruise, but I liked him in this movie. So, I mean, it doesn't break my heart that he's not nominated. And I like that the focus wasn't so much on him, that it was really an ensemble cast.
Right. Yeah.
I really, really, appreciate that. But Steve and I both really loved watching it. Okay. My last one is definitely a not to see. So this is a perfect ending. It's called Tar. Rotten Tomatoes gave it 91%. And I don't know how it ever got that. Okay, first of all, it's about this famous conductor, of
fictional
orchestras.
Conductor, I should say.
And it's fictional. I know the press that they put out about it makes it sound like it's a real person, and it's not at all. It's an orchestra conductor. I swear to God, if you put all the clips of music together that's in the whole show, it maybe is 3 minutes.
Wow.
So they're dropping all these names, very, very heady stuff about, you know, different composers and elite talk that they, you know, whatever. And you think that's going to be what the movie's about, kind of have something to do with that. But it's kind of just put in there for no reason, because the movie is about a woman that you don't like falling apart. What she does comes back and she has to face some consequences for her behavior. And it's like, what are we supposed to feel sorry for her? I mean, seriously, there's nothing likable that I found in this movie.
Really?
But I will tell you, I know, I can't believe how many people like this, because I just did not. We meet Tar, the conductor, at the height of her career as she's preparing both a book launch and a much anticipated live performance of Mahler's Fifth Symphony. And over the ensuing weeks, her life begins to unravel in a singularly modern way, including claims of sexual abuse. Now, reviews have said that the result is a searing examination of power and its impact and durability in today's society, and I call BS on that.
Wow.
It talks about part of cancel culture because she was canceled. And I don't like that, because it puts things in boxes and makes it a thing as opposed to a real person who did bad things and facing consequences for it. Much like Lydia, the main character, the movie is skillful and polished and fascinating, perhaps, but it's missing a heart. It has no heart. I forced myself to watch the whole thing, hoping there was some redemption at all. And it's not. And the ending is so abrupt. There's no insight into why she behaves this way. It just tells the story on the surface. I don't get it. I don't get it. Don't see it.
How is Cate Blanchett, I have to ask?
Okay. Cate Blanchett is good in everything she does. She's fabulous. I mean, it's a tour de force. She pretty much is the whole movie. And she is fabulous. So I guess if you like her and you really want to see some incredible acting, then see it. But not for the story, as far as I'm concerned.
I see. All right. Well, to sum it up, for the Best Picture nominees, I would say 2C, Top Gun Maverick and Elvis, kind of to see The Fabelmans, not to see Avatar The Way of Water because of James Cameron. You know, All Quiet on the Western Front, you can watch it if you want.
Okay, and for me, to see is definitely Everything Everywhere All at Once. I don't have an opinion on the ones that I didn't see. They, you know, sure. If you like that kind of thing, go for it. I can't say if you should see it or not because I didn't see it. And Tar, I would say, is definitely a not to see.
All right. Well, Pauline, we did some research on who we thought was going to win the big award of the night. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I'm kind of going with the consensus out there, which is Everything Everywhere All at Once. And for the Best Picture category, they vote differently, it sounds like. So at the Oscars, Best Picture has preferential voting, okay? And so all members of the Academy give their top five out of the nominees. If one movie gets more than 50% of the number one pick, that's who wins. But if not, the lowest ranking is eliminated and number two picks are used until one movie has more than 50%.
That's a bit confusing, but if you think about it, it makes sense.
It is kind of confusing. Mm-hmm. And what I read is Everything Everywhere All at Once is the favorite, but they're also saying that All Quiet on the Western Front might pick up more consistent rankings. So because of the way they vote for it, that might happen.
Sure.
That's what I have to say. I think that's going to get it, and I support that. Mm-hmm. Definitely over
Tar.
Definitely over Tar. Yes, exactly.
It's
definitely
fine.
Over Elvis.
Wow. Okay.
And I would say just because it's new and different over Top Gun. Okay, Cosmo, you have some thoughts.
Well, I agree with you in who I think is going to win. Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Once it won the Critics' Choice Award, then it picked up more steam. It won DGA Award, the PGA Award, and most recently, the Top SAG Award. It won actually four awards there. That is the favorite. I'm a bit pretentious to say right now that that is going to be my final pick for Best Picture, because I do a post on Planet WizKid about a day or two before the ceremony with my final predictions. But that's the favorite at this point. I think other potential ones that could win upsets are The Fabelmans, which won a Golden Globe, and The Banshees of Inisherin, which also won a Golden Globe over Everything Everywhere All at Once. All Quiet on the Western Front won seven BAFTA awards, which are basically the British Oscars, including Best Film. And Tar is the fourth film in history to win Best Film from the New York, Los Angeles, London, and National Critics Society, the world's top critic groups.
Aren't they all elite places?
Very exclusive.
I don't know. I don't know how they could pick that. I just don't see it.
Well, maybe you should apply to be on there, you know?
Right. A dissenting voice.
Yeah. And, you know, I think Top Gun does have a chance of winning if it won the National Board of Review Award for Best Film. And it has a very strong consensus out there of people who really love this movie. But I'm going with Everything Everywhere All at Once right now. You know, I could change my mind.
Cosmo, we have to move on. And I'm excited to move on because let's introduce our guest.
Yes, we have a great guest today. Drum roll, please. Our guest for the 20th episode anniversary of Curtain Call is Michael Monsiger. Yes. Pauline, do you know Michael?
I don't know Michael. I've never worked with them. I have never met him. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really excited for this show because most of the guests we have, I've known or worked with or something.
Right. That's why I'm excited for this interview as well. And Michael is part of the Guild's show this month, A Doll's House. Mark Robinson is directing with his signature innovation, of course. This play is one of the most performed across the globe, thanks largely in part to its iconic characters, themes, and good old-fashioned soap opera drama.
That's right.
But since the source material is in the public domain, Mark, Michael, and company have devised an original retelling, kind of like YPTW for adults. And with, you know, right?
Yes.
And this is written by Henrik Ibsen, and with a magnificent cast, magnificent, you can trust the Guild to Helmer. Helmers are the characters in it. This well-known play. Those were all terrible puns, but I needed to include them.
I really appreciate it, though. I appreciate it. I really do. And they made me laugh, so they weren't that bad.
Okay, that's good. Crazy. Yeah. So without further ado, let us please welcome Michael Monsiger to Curtain Call. Hello, Michael, and welcome to Curtain Call.
Thank you. Good to be here.
It's so nice to have you on, a new face.
New experience for me, too.
Yeah, you were just telling us about how this is pretty much your first show in quite a while, playing in Ibsen's Dollhouse at the Guild. To fully understand that, first what I'm going to ask you is, how did you kind of get started in theater? But first, I'm going to backtrack and start you off with, I always forget,
a tongue twister.
Do you have a favorite tongue twister?
Yeah, it'd have to be the sixth sheep sick.
I've never heard that one. No. Say it again. Please say it again.
The sixth sheep's sixth sheep's sick.
The sixth sheep's sixth sheep sick. That's right. A hard one. I'm going to remember that one.
Yeah, I know.
That's good. All right, now we're warmed up. Woo-hoo!
There we go.
Yeah.
Nice to see. Can you do it more than one time, or how many times in a row can you do it?
Well, maybe more than I can do toy boat. I don't know. No, the sixth sheep, I think that's it. I can just do it once.
We have our answer. Well, I always love learning a new one. You know, as much as I love red leather, yellow leather, that gets circulated a lot. So it's good to have a new one. So now I'm going to go back to my original question, which is, how did you get started in theater? And kind of the question that I usually ask is, what is your first memory on stage?
I always liked theater. I tried out for the school play from the first time that was offered. So I auditioned for plays beginning in what we called junior high back then. The earliest memory of a part that I had, I don't remember the play, but my part was a radio announcer, and I was listed in the script simply as, for the program, simply as radio announcer. And I had a fairly long speech, but what's really nice about it was that because I was a radio announcer and off stage, I actually got to read my part out loud during
the right.
That's the earliest memory that's coming to mind right now.
Well, look how far you've come from radio announcer to radio guest, you know? So your full arc. And so you say that you did some theater at St. Olaf. So did that kind of continue through until it just kind of went away for a little while? That's kind of what happens.
Well, after graduating from St. Olaf, I guess I honestly didn't seek out theater. I got married, had kids. I'm an ELCA Lutheran pastor, went to seminary, had my first call. My first call was in rural Harmony, Minnesota, which isn't all that far from Blooming Prairie, Cosmo, where you said you're from.
Oh, yeah.
Just one thing and another, life happened. Now my youngest kids are sixth graders. Sixth grade twins, and they're old enough, independent enough that I feel like I have a little more leisure time. And so I thought, I'm going to audition for a play. Finally got back into it with playing in Ibsen's Dollhouse.
That's wonderful. A lot of people take breaks, it seems, that we've talked to, and also on Musician Talk, musicians that I've talked to take a break when they have young kids because you just don't have the time. And also, I must say, you're a pastor, so you've continued acting a bit, right? Because you use those chops on as a pastor, I gotta believe.
Yeah, being up in front of people and speaking and singing music. I love music. Being a pastor has been to some extent an outlet for some of the same sorts of experience that you get being in theater.
And theater kind of primes you for public speaking in a way. A lot of people have heard this poll that said public speaking is most people's number one fear, more than death, which is bizarre. But, so it's good to kind of conquer that by getting on stage, even if you don't have plans for a long-running theater career still. It can really help you in a lot of ways. And you are now in Ibsen's Dollhouse, playing in Ibsen's Dollhouse, which, to give some context, this is A Doll's House by Henrik Ibsen, which was written in the 19th century. But you, the cast, and director Mark Robinson have kind of devised your own version. So could you kind of explain what the basic plot is?
The basic plot It centers around a woman named Nora Helmer. If you come to the play, what Mark and the cast have done with the first act, it really kind of sets up what the play is about in a, I think, a very entertaining and informative way. I've learned a lot just from being in this play, that it's considered one of the early feminist works. Nora is kind of trapped in the traditional gender roles of her culture, and it's about her struggles and her epiphany about, you know, the world that she's trapped in. She's the central character, and it's mainly her story.
That's pretty much the basic plot of it, and I remember reading it was very controversial when it came out almost 200 years ago. It's interesting that it's still a very well-known play today and has been performed how many times? A lot of Ibsen's works, but this one is pretty famous. And so that kind of gives some leeway into allowing you to work and devise your own version as you guys have. So how have you kind of changed the act structure and how it plays out?
One thing we've done is made it a lot shorter. I mean, we figured that if we did the play line for line all the way through it, we'd be there for about 4 hours.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
So we've done that. The way that Mark and the cast have done that is that we kind of set it up that when you come in, it's like you're coming into a rehearsal. He's added some characters, a director and a costumer and a dramaturge. I didn't know what a dramaturge was before, but kind of someone who instructs the cast about the background of the play and that sort of thing.
Oh, sure.
And it's entertaining. They kind of explain what's going on in the play through the dialogue themselves, and also show how and why we're shortening the play so that
Oh,
we keep
cool.
the
Nice.
essential plot elements. But Mark said he wants the audience to really kind of have the theater experience where they really get lost in the story and not be distracted by 19th century dialogue. We're working with a public domain English translation, so that also is
Oh,
100
sure.
years old. So even the English translation feels a little stilted. So
Yeah.
he's tried to make it more so that a contemporary audience is going to get lost in the story and not be distracted by, you know, the language and dialogue and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, that took
And
a lot of prep then. I mean, deciding to where to cut when you're taking not, you know, something down from 2.5 hours to two hours, you're taking something down from 4 hours to 2 hours. That takes a lot of work to make that happen. And I mean, the perfect person for it is, of course, Mark, because he attacks it intellectually as well as emotionally, which is, and he's got the chops for it. So
He's a visionary, kind
he
of, I
is.
guess you could say that.
Oh, I was just going to say, did you say what your character is?
So I play Nils Krogstad.
And who is he?
So Nils is, he is an interesting character. He is, at least at first glance, sort of the villain of the piece. He blackmails Nora and extorts money from her. It'd be really easy to play him as sort of a mustache twirling, snidely whiplash kind of villain, but he's complex. Ibsen does a really good job of providing his motivations for acting the way he does, and he ends up in a very different place from where he starts out.
Nice. So the
Interesting.
characters are not cookie cutter. They are nuanced.
That's our goal. One of the challenges that Mark Robinson laid down for us was to try to make these characters real people and not flat cartoon characters.
Right. So this is a very different type of show, and the original play is three acts. Is this still three acts or less?
It's two acts.
It's two acts.
Yeah.
Okay. Just sounds so fascinating. So again, go get your tickets. You can buy them on northfieldartsguild.org. You can call the office, go down to the office, whatever you have to do to get tickets to playing in Ibsen's Dollhouse. And it performs starting tonight. Tonight is opening night, going through Sunday, and then starting again next weekend. Yeah, so there's plenty of dates. Are you guys close to being sold out yet?
You know, I don't know that.
Okay.
I
You're
know
not
my wife and kids got tickets, but
good.
yeah, it'd be a good idea to hurry up and get those. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And if we had the director on, he would know.
Yes.
I know.
He
But you
would
know, as an
know.
actor, it's like you kind of don't want to be.
That's right. That would distract me from my craft if I worried about that.
All right. Yeah. Well, I'm always the nosy one in the production. Yeah. The actors aren't usually briefed on that confidential information. But
That's right.
thank you for answering my questions, Michael. This show sounds just really interesting and more than one-dimensional. It's very
Yes.
complex, and I like
Yes.
shows like that a lot. Very thematic. So, with that, I'm going to throw you over to Pauline for the section that I call successes and failures, but mostly failures. So just get mentally prepared.
Goodness. No. We're not going to have any failures. We're going to
Well.
save that for when he goes up against the dialect master.
True.
Okay, Michael. So, you haven't really auditioned since college. I'm wondering either if you have any good audition stories from middle school, high school, or college, or if you want to tell us about your audition for this show.
Well, I could tell you about my audition for this show.
Okay.
I guess, I was really inspired to audition for a play at this particular time by reading the novel Station Eleven. I don't know if you're familiar with either with the novel or the HBO series. I'm sure it's about a post-apocalyptic world in which this traveling theater troupe performs classical music and puts on Shakespeare because
Okay.
survival isn't enough, right? Yeah,
I'm
Station
so
Eleven.
excited to watch this. This sounds
I
totally
know.
like
And
another.
so I said, you know what? But I'm going to just see if there's a show to audition for. Went on the NAG website, saw, sure enough, they're taking auditions for a Dollhouse. So I thought, well, okay, I'll sign up for an audition time. Went down, read for Mark, and he emailed me and said I could be in the cast. So
Oh, easy
that's
peasy. So you
it.
didn't have
Yeah, it was.
you didn't have to prepare a piece.
No, he
He
had
had sides there
the
for you too.
text.
Yeah. Okay. So next thing is, do you remember from your experience, either this could be even this week because it's tech week, so you've been running the show, or from past experiences, any the best save on stage or the worst
Mess up.
mistake, mishap on stage?
Okay. Yeah. So I got this question in advance. My kids have been in
Okay.
theater, and when one of my kids was part of the high school production of West Side Story, Broadway,
Which play you cut out there? Sorry.
West Side Story.
Got it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. During one of the performances, Bernardo and Tony are fighting, and whoever has the knife drops the knife. It ends up on the floor. And Bernardo just kind of slides the knife over to Tony with his foot so Tony can pick it up and kill him. So that was my favorite.
That was really good because
Right.
that's one you just could not allow the
Yeah.
audience to see, of course, two people fighting, one person giving the other a knife. Good for them.
Yes,
Good for
wow.
them. As you start to get back into theater and you're thinking about roles, in your mind, is there like the greatest role that you haven't ever had that you would like to have?
Oh, of course, I wouldn't be Jean Valjean.
Okay, there you go.
Oh, all right.
Of course you do.
I don't know
Right.
if I could hit all those notes, but that's what I want to do. Yeah.
How many octaves is your range, right?
You could have a few years ago, Purple Door Youth Theater was putting on a school edition of Les Mis. You could have gone in
I
and said you're a
saw
student.
that. I saw that. I considered trying to sneak in as a student, but I ended up not.
It didn't work. Someday you get to audition for that role and get it and be it.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great?
Okay, so thank you for that. And now I'm sorry to say that I'm going to turn you back to, well, no, it's not Cosmo.
No.
Who is it over there? Oh, God, it's him. Oh, it's the dialect master.
Yes,
Sorry, I'm
yes.
going to just turn you out right on over to him.
You know what? I'm sorry, Pauline, but that offended me. I'm now known as the dialector, actually.
I never can
Huh.
keep it straight, Cosmo. I just
Thank
can't.
you for saying that again, because I heard Dalek Master.
Oh, okay. Well, that would.
Dialect. See, I should have done
Okay.
more warm up.
Because, I'm a
Dialect.
Doctor Who fan as well.
Oh,
So I
sure.
so
Right.
that would,
Yes, I am
yeah.
too.
Yes. Is that one of your dream roles, too, to play the doctor himself?
would be
Oh,
awesome.
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or a Dalek.
So
I can do
much
a
fun.
Dalek as well.
Sure. Yeah, so I've transformed into the Dialector. Everything you know about me, push aside because I'm evil now. I'm going to give you a quote, and then I'm going to have you say that quote with a character voice, a dialect, or an accent. And Pauline, I see you're in distress over there, but worry not, because I looked up a quote that we can use. I looked up some Henrik Ibsen quotes, so you might need to get on your 19th century lingo. And I was looking him up, and I think I might go as him for Halloween. That beard is very unique.
I offered to try to grow that beard for the show, the beard and the hair, but both Mark and my wife said that would not be necessary.
All right. Well, we'll see. It's the dream is never dead. All right. Our home has been nothing but a playroom. I have been your doll wife, just as at home I was Papa's doll child, and here the children have been my dolls.
Oh, so it's a line actually from this show.
Yes, it is.
I know that line, yeah.
All right, Michael Monsiger, I am now the dialect master. I don't know why I have a German accent.
Please do it. Could do the whole thing in German accent. Come
do
on.
Do the whole thing in German. All right,
yes.
This is European. So first dialect is Norwegian. I'm wondering if you can do a Norwegian accent because Ibsen was Norwegian.
Our home has been nothing but a playroom. I have been your doll wife. Just as at home I was Papa's doll child, and here the children have been my dolls.
Yes!
Excellent.
I was going to say, you just
well
dove
done.
Right in, and I was going to say, oh no, Norwegian, that's hard.
A lot of my family is Norwegian, actually, so I think they'll be proud of that. Let's see here of another dialect I can give you. All right, here's one. It's kind of a character voice. News anchor, maybe try doing Walter Cronkite or something like that.
Our home has been nothing but a playroom. I have been your doll wife just as at home I was Papa's doll child. And here the children have been my dolls.
Wow. That's good. Wow, maybe that radio announcer role really prepped you for that.
That was good. That was good. Right, he hearkened back to junior high, was it? Right.
Now we have almost come to the end of your battle with the Dialector. Now this is your one last chance to defeat him once and for all. Do you have a dialect character voice or accent that you would like to choose yourself?
I'll try to do, like, just off the top of my head, kind of a Basil Fawlty imitating a German accent.
Basil from Fawlty Towers doing a German accent? Is that what you just said?
That's the one, yeah, Basil. Yeah.
Wow, if you get this out of the ballpark, the Dialector is going down for a month.
Yeah.
At least. That's a tough one. Okay.
Right. Our home has been nothing but a playroom. I have been your doll wife. Just as at home, I was Papa's doll child. And here the children have become my dolls.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, with those long legs. Oh, I love that show. Nicely done.
I've never seen it, I'll be honest, but I might have to watch it now just because of that.
You should. You should.
Yeah.
Fawlty Towers is brilliant.
Is it? Okay. I'll have
yes.
to look that up. Very angry German, too. So congrats on that. Congrats with the European accents and the random American news anchor. Well, I think that you defeated the Dialector for quite a while now. He might have to be replaced by his sibling, the Accentor. Thank you very much for that, Michael. And unfortunately, I think we've come to the end of our interview here. So is
yeah.
there perhaps a particular quote, maybe theatrically pertaining, that you would like to leave us off with?
And the first thing that came to mind was the roar of the grease paint, the smell of the crowd. I mean, I thought, you know, I could go with All the World's a Stage, The Play's a Thing, but, you know.
Yeah, overdone.
Yeah, cliched, but, and I, that's, you know, Pauline, I'm sorry, that hurt my feelings, because at the end of every show, I say, All the World's a Stage, but.
I know, that's our tagline there, mister.
Yeah,
you're
just
messing with us now.
Kind of attacked me there, but nonetheless, well, I do like that quote, and thank you for providing that. to us, Michael. And again, go see Playing in an Ibsen's Dollhouse. See Michael in it as the villain or the anti-hero, whatever you want to call him. I'm looking forward to seeing you on stage. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Cosmo. Thank you, Pauline. It's been a pleasure.
Yes.
It has been. And you did a wonderful job. And I'm so glad to meet you and mm-hmm. and to get to meet you before we go see the show. I always mm-hmm. love that. I know a lot of people in the shows at the Guild, and it's fun to see a new face. It really, really yes. is. So, and somebody mm-hmm. with some obvious chops. It's very obvious.
Yes.
Right. Thank you.
Well, what a fun interview featuring some great character voices.
I know. It's like he hasn't been on stage, you know, for many, many years since college. Mm-hmm. And he did better than a me, certainly, than on and off the stage for always. And that was just a delight. Really,
it
really.
Was. Yes, he's a great guy, a great actor, and once again, to see Michael on stage in A Doll's House along with seven other wonderful performers, go to northfieldartsguild.org, call the office, go down to the office to buy tickets, and, you know, they could sell out quickly, so you're going to want to get your hands on them. Mark Robinson is the director. If you want to know more about him, we had him on in episode 3, so yes. you can access our YouTube archive. Playing in Ibsen's Dollhouse performs March 3rd, 4th, and 5th. This is opening weekend, and then again next weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That's the 10th, 11th, and 12th, 2023. I can't believe it's 2023 already.
I can't believe it's March. I mean,
yeah, I know.
How? I mean, I'm very happy, of course, because you know how I feel about winter.
Yes.
I'm glad to be coming out the other side of that. What a weird winter we've had. Weird weather.
It certainly was. Thank you to our special guest star, Michael Mansiger. And thank you to Jeff Johnson and KYMN Radio for broadcasting this.
And thank you so much, Cosmo, for doing this with me. It's so much fun, and I look forward to our April show.
Yes, me as well. Thank you very much, Pauline.
You got it, Cosmo. And remember,
all the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players.